Chapter 36. Experience in various countries, which, to do him justice, he told with vivacity and humor. Thus they reached the end of the flight, and entered behind a balustrade. The prospect will be very lovely from this point, when the fog has blown off, apostrophe said Lord Mountclere faintly, for climbing and chattering at the same time had fairly taken away his breath. He leant against the masonry to rest himself. The air is clearing already. I fancy I saw a sunbeam or two. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it will be lovelier above, apostrophe said Ethelberta. Let us go to the platform at the base of the Fletch, and wait for a view there. Apostrophe, apostrophe, with all my heart, apostrophe said her attentive companion. They passed in at a door, and up some more stone steps, which landed them finally in the upper chamber of the tower. Lord Mountclere sank on a beam, and asked smilingly, if her ambition was not satisfied with this goal. I recollect going to the top some years ago, apostrophe he added, and it did not occur to me as being a thing worth doing a second time. And there was no fog then either. Apostrophe, oh, apostrophe said Ethelberta, it is one of the most splendid things a person can do. The fog is going fast, and everybody with the least artistic feeling in the direction of bird's eye views makes the ascent every time of coming here. Apostrophe, apostrophe, of course, apostrophe said Lord Mountclere. And I am only too happy to go to any height with you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, since you so kindly offer, we will go to the very top of the spire up through the fog and into the sunshine, apostrophe said Ethelberta. Lord Mountclere covered a grim misgiving by a gay smile, and away they went up a ladder admitting to the base of the huge iron framework above. Then they entered upon the regular ascent of the cage, towards the hoped-for celestial blue, and among breezes which never descended so low as the town. The journey was enlivened with more breathless witticisms from Lord Mountclere, till she stepped ahead of him again, when he asked how many more steps there were. She inquired of the man in the blue blouse who accompanied them. 55, apostrophe she returned to Lord Mountclere a moment later. They went round, and round, and yet around. How many are there now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Lord Mountclere demanded this time of the man. 190, monsieur, apostrophe he said. But there were only 55 ever so long ago. Apostrophe, apostrophe, 205, then, apostrophe said the man. Perhaps the mist prevented Mademoiselle hearing me distinctly? Apostrophe, apostrophe, never mind. I would follow, were there 5,000 more, did Mademoiselle bid me? Apostrophe, apostrophe said the exhausted nobleman gallantly, in English. Hush! Apostrophe, apostrophe said Ethelberta, with displeasure. He doesn't understand a word, apostrophe said Lord Mountclere. They paced the remainder of their spiral pathway in silence, and having at last reached the summit, Lord Mountclere sank down on one of the steps, panting out, dear me, apostrophe, apostrophe, Ethelberta leaned and looked around, and said, how extraordinary this is. It is sky above, below, everywhere. Apostrophe, he dragged himself together, and stepped to her side. They formed as it were a little world to themselves, being completely ensnared by the fog, which here was dense as a sea of milk. Below was neither town, country, nor cathedral, simply whiteness, into which the iron legs of their gigantic perch faded to nothing. We have lost our labor. There is no prospect for you, after all, Lord Mountclere, apostrophe said Ethelberta, turning her eyes upon him. He looked at her face, as if there were, and she continued, listen, I hear sounds from the town. People's voices, and carts, and dogs, and the noise of a railway train. Shall we now descend, and own ourselves disappointed? Apostrophe, apostrophe, whenever you choose. Apostrophe, apostrophe, before they had put their intention in practice there appeared to be reasons for waiting a while. Out of the plain of fog beneath, a stone tooth seemed to be upheaving itself. Then another showed forth. These were the summits of the Saint Romain and the Butter Towers at the western end of the building. As the fog stratum collapsed, other summits manifested their presence further off, among them the two spires and lantern of St. Owen's. When to the left the dome of St. Madeline's caught a first ray from the peering sun, under which its scaly surface glittered like a fish. Then the mist rolled off in earnest, and revealed far beneath them a whole city, its red, blue, and gray roofs forming a variegated pattern, small and subdued as that of a pavement in mosaic. Eastward in the spacious outlook lay the hill of St. Catherine, breaking intrusively into the large level valley of the Seine. South was the river which had been the parent of the mist, and the Isle Lacroix, gorgeous in scarlet, purple, and green. On the western horizon could be dimly discerned melancholy forests, and further to the right stood the hill and rich groves of Boisguillaume. Ethelberta having now done looking around, the descent was begun and continued without intermission till they came to the passage behind the parapet. Ethelberta was about to step airily forward, when there reached her ear the voices of persons below. She recognized as one of them the slow unaccented tones of Ney. "Please wait a minute." She said in a peremptory manner of confusion sufficient to attract Lord Mountclair's attention. A recollection had sprung to her mind in a moment. As he had half made an appointment with Ney at her aunt's hotel for this very week, and here was he in Rouen to keep it. To meet him, while indulging in this vagary with Lord Mountclair, which, now that the mood it had been engendered by was passing off, she somewhat regretted, would be the height of imprudence. "I should like to go round to the other side of the parapet for a few moments," she said, with decisive quickness. "Come with me, Lord Mountclair." They went round to the other side. Here she kept the Viscount and their Seuss until she deemed it probable that Ney had passed by, when she returned with her companions and descended to the bottom. They emerged into the Rue Saint-Romain, whereupon a woman called from the opposite side of the way to their guide, stating that she had told the other English gentleman that the English lady had gone into the Fletch. Ethelberta turned and looked up. She could just discern Ney's form upon the steps of the Fletch above, ascending toilsomely in search of her. What English gentleman could that have been? Said Lord Mountclair, after paying the man. He spoke in a way which showed he had not overlooked her confusion. "It seems that he must have been searching for us, or rather for you." "Only Mr. Ney," said Ethelberta. "He told me he was coming here. I believe he is waiting for an interview with me." Said Lord Mountclair. "Business, only business," said she. "Shall I leave you? Perhaps the business is important, most important." "Unfortunately it is." "You must forgive me this once. I cannot help. Will you give me permission to make a difficult remark?" Said Lord Mountclair, in an impatient voice. "With pleasure." "Well then, the business I meant was an engagement to be married." "Had it been possible for a woman to be perpetually on the alert, she might now have supposed that Lord Mountclair knew all about her. A mechanical deference must have restrained such an illusion had he seen her in any other light than that of a distracting slave. But she answered quietly, "So did I, but how does he know, dear me, dear me?" "I beg pardon," said the Viscount. She looked at him curiously, as if to imply that he was seriously out of his reckoning in respect of her, if he supposed that he would be allowed to continue this little play at love-making, as long as he chose, when she was offered the position of wife by a man so good as Ney. They stood in silence side by side till, much to her ease, Cornelia appeared at the corner waiting. At the last moment he said, in somewhat agitated tones, and with what appeared to be a renewal of the respect which had been imperceptibly dropped since they crossed the channel, I was not aware of your engagement to Mr. Ney. I fear I have been acting mistakenly on that account. There is no engagement as yet, said she. Lord Mountclair brightened like a child. Then may I have a few words in private, not now, not today, said Ethelberta, with a certain irritation that she knew not what. Believe me, Lord Mountclair, you are mistaken in many things. I mean, you think more of me than you ought. A time will come when you will despise me for this day's work, and it is madness in you to go further. Lord Mountclair, knowing what he did know, may have imagined what she referred to, but Ethelberta was without the least proof that he had the key to her humor. Well, well, I'll be responsible for the madness, he said. I know you to be a famous woman, at all events, and that's enough. I would say more, but I cannot hear. May I call upon you? Not now. When shall I? If you must, let it be a month hence at my house in town. She said indifferently, the Hamlet mood being still upon her. Yes, call upon us then, and I will tell you everything that may remain to be told, if you should be inclined to listen. A rumor is afloat which will undeceive you in much, and depress me to death. And now I will walk back. Pray excuse me. She entered the street, and joined Cornelia. Lord Mountclair paced irregularly along, turned the corner, and went towards his inn, nearing which his tread grew lighter, till he scarcely seemed to touch the ground. He became gleeful, and said to himself, nervously palming his hip with his left hand, as if previous to plunging it into hot water for some prize. Upon my life I've a good mind. Upon my life I have, I must make a straightforward thing of it, and at once, or he will have her. But he shall not, and I will the fascinated man, screaming inwardly with the excitement, glee, and agony of his position, entered the hotel, wrote a hasty note to Ethelberta, and dispatched it by hand, looked to his dress and appearance, ordered a carriage, and in a quarter of an hour, was being driven towards the Hotel Beausejour, whither his note had preceded him. 35. The hotel continued, and the quay in front, Ethelberta, having arrived there some time earlier, had gone straight to her aunt, whom she found sitting behind a large ledger in the office, making up the accounts with her husband, a well-framed reflective man with a gray beard. M. Mowlin bustled, waited for her remarks and replies, and made much of her in a general way, when Ethelberta said, what as he had wanted to say instantly, has a gentleman called Mr. Ney been here? Oh yes, I think it is Ney, there's a card upstairs, replied her aunt. I told him you were alone at the cathedral, and I believe he walked that way. Besides that one, another has come for you, a Mr. Ladywell, and he is waiting. Not for me? Yes, indeed. I thought he seemed so anxious, under a sort of assumed calmness, that I recommended him to remain till you came inches. Goodness, and why did you? Ethelberta said, and thought how much her mother's sister resembled her mother in doings of that sort. I thought he had some good reason for seeing you. Are these men intruders, then? Oh no, a woman who attempts a public career must expect to be treated as public property. What would be an intrusion on the domiciled gentlewoman, is a tribute to me. You cannot have celebrity and sex privilege both. Thus Ethelberta laughed off the awkward conjuncture, inwardly deploring the unconscionable maternal meddling which had led to this, though not resentfully, for as he had too much staunchness of heart to decry a parent's misdirected zeal. had the clanship feeling been universally as strong as in the Chikoro family, the fable of the well-bonded faggot might have remained unwritten. Lady Well had sent her a letter about getting his picture of herself engraved for an illustrated paper, and S.E. had not replied. Considering that S.E. had nothing to do with the matter, her form and feature having been given in the painting as no portrait at all, but as those of an ideal. To see him now would be vexatious, and yet it was chilly, and formal to an ungenerous degree to keep aloof from him, sitting lonely in the same house. A few weeks hence, apostrophe she thought, when Menlove's disclosures make me ridiculous, he may slight me as a lackey's girl, an upstart, an adventuress, and hardly return my bow in the street. Then I may wish I had given him no personal cause for additional bitterness. Apostrophe apostrophe so, putting off the fine lady, Ethelberta thought she would see Lady Well at once. Lady Well was unaffectedly glad to meet her. So glad, that Ethelberta wished heartily, for his sake, there could be warm friendship between herself and him, as well as all her lovers, without that insistent courtship and marriage question, which sent them all scattering like leaves in a pestilent blast, at enmity with one another. She was less pleased, when she found that Lady Well, after saying all there was to say about his painting, gently signified that he had been misinformed, as he believed, concerning her future intentions, which had led to his absenting himself entirely from her, the remark being, of course, a natural product of her mother's injudicious message to him. She cut him short with terse candor. Yes, apostrophe she said, a false report is in circulation. I am not yet engaged to be married to anyone, if that is your meaning. Apostrophe apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.